With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com.
Finish your journey.
As I was going to say, right. You know, your journey may just be beginning. Warm weather, spring is in the air. School's going to be out in another month or so. You're planning your road trips. AAA will get you there. But here on the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA, our journey is coming to an end.
We've arrived at our final destination.
Yes, we have. It's been an outstanding ride here.
It's very sad.
But the 2015 NFL Draft is in the books. I'm Chris McPherson, joining alongside Bo Wolf, who did a phenomenal job all weekend long in Eagles Draft Central, breaking down the tape with Greg Cosell, providing astute analysis, delving into draft picks.
Tossing up the softballs to the man who does provide the analysis. The man who watches the tape. And talks to coaches.
And alongside also Fran Duffy, the man behind the scenes, did a phenomenal job producing Eagles Draft Central all weekend long.
Thank you, Chris.
The segments. Outstanding coverage, top to bottom.
Bottom to top.
Can't say enough good things. You gave the fans what they wanted.
Thank you.
And a special thanks to the people behind the scenes, Brian Thomas, producing the podcast. Also, shout out to Melissa Kelly, Chris Barletto.
The voice.
The voice of the bumpers for the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA. So what we're going to do today, it's our recap show. We're going to look at the Eagles' six picks in depth. We're going to also take a quick look at the undrafted free agents and also look around the NFC East to see how the teams the Eagles will play in 2015, how they performed in the NFL draft. So this is certainly a draft for the defense. Aguilar, obviously the topic, number 20. But after that, all five of the remaining selections used on the defense, especially in the secondary, a position group include corner and safety that's been totally overhauled this offseason. You let go of the likes of Kerry Williams, Bradley Fletcher, Nate Allen, signs elsewhere. And now you brought in Byron Maxwell, Walter Thurman. You've used these high draft picks across the board. Definitely an area of emphasis for the Eagles this offseason, a position group that they knew that needed to be improved and one that they wanted to get younger at. More importantly, what do you guys think about the secondary being addressed heavily, not just this offseason overall, but in the draft in particular?
Well, listen, I think if you talk to Eagles fans during the season last year, this is what they would have wanted. They would have wanted a brand new secondary, save for Malcolm Jenkins, and that's basically what they're getting. And the Eagles led the league last year in giving up plays over 20 yards and over 40 yards. They were sort of really, you can make a case, the weak link of the Eagles team last year. And so Chip Kelly recognized that and did all he could this offseason in charge of personnel to overhaul it. Obviously, we know about Maxwell, Thurmond, and E.J. Biggers brought in to compete.
Yes.
Listen, we love Eric Rowe. I thought he was a possibility in the first round if the Eagles moved back a couple spots.
He was a possibility.
And even and Chip Kelly acknowledged that. And even at 20, I thought if all of their guys ahead of him were gone, that Rowe would have been the guy over Byron Jones, I thought. And who knows if that would have been the case. But, coming out of the draft with Rowe is great, I think. I think he'll be able to compete to start right away at cornerback on the outside. And then you take two lottery tickets in the sixth round, guys who fit what the Eagles want to do. Maybe one of them works out. Maybe they'll be good special teamers, and you add to the group competing there. And obviously makes a lot of sense. I like what they did there.
Yeah, and you look at a guy like Jacory Shepard. Obviously, we've talked extensively about Eric Rowe throughout the spring,
right?
And winter, we both like him. All three of us like him and his versatility, his length.
He was the first player when we were watching guys for the Senior Bowl, who I remember being like, "Oh, okay, I like this guy."
Yeah.
Just the first guy who sort of like made something click.
Piqued your interest.
Yeah,
no question. And just the way that he plays, I mean, Eagles fans are going to really, really like him, once you see him on the field. You look in the sixth round at Jacory Shepard, a guy that, it's funny, me and C-Mac were talking about it after the draft. I listed Jacory Shepard as an off corner in my Eagle Eye piece, and that was because of his athleticism. That was how he was used, a lot of the time at Kansas. But obviously, and I acknowledged it in the piece that he's got the ability to play in a press scheme like what the Eagles do because of his size, because of his length. He's able to disrupt early at the line of scrimmage, but he's got really good athleticism. He's got really fluid hips. You could see it in the segment we did, the film breakdown that you did with Greg Cosell on draft day, where you can see him line up in off coverage and just the ease and movement as he turns and was able to run with receivers.
Running with Philip Dorsett down the field.
Yeah, no question. And so It's a shame he got hurt, you know, on the first day of the draft, but
probably helped us.
It helped us. It worked in the Eagles' favor because they got a really good player.
And he ended up running a slower 40 time, I think 4.65, because he had that hamstring
still
going on.
Still nursing it. Yep.
So yeah, that's good. I think I broke the Jacory Shepard story about a month ago when I went into the bathroom upstairs and passed a guy with a Kansas jacket walking out, and I told C-Mac, I think Jacory Shepard's here. So
did I ask you whether he was limping or not?
I'll take first. As first reported by
there you go. On that. As first reported by Beowulf on the Journey to Draft podcast, or actually in the cubicle of the NovaCare complex. What did you guys think of the dynamic of Chip Kelly and Ed Manowitz working together for the first time? I think the biggest surprise for me was that they end up with just 6 picks, because we debated whether they would go for fewer or for more. And to me, I like how they worked the board because of the fact they took their best player available at number 20. And they realized that Rowe was just too good of a value to be there in that middle of the second round, that they were willing to give up those fifth round picks and to be able to move up and get him. I thought they did a good job of maneuvering and sticking to their board. What did you guys think of the dynamic of those two working together, leading the draft for the first time?
It comes down to 5 letters. BPAFU.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked. Everyone, you know, a lot of the people, I guess people are looking for something to complain about, but a lot of people are complaining about, oh, there's no offensive lineman in the draft class.
Well, I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to complain about, but go ahead.
I think, look, would you have rather they had reached for a lineman that wasn't as high on, as opposed to a DB that they may have thought was a third or fourth round value, in the sixth round. So, I think ideally, sure, would they have liked to have a lineman? Absolutely, but I'm not going to, shed tears over it. I think that they did a really good job in terms of finding the best players at where they were selecting at, and they were good fits for the team. So it's a good group.
Yeah, it's not like if the Eagles had forced an offensive lineman into one of the sixth round picks or the seventh round picks, we'd all be like, okay, great, this guy's going to come in and start at right guard or something like that. The third round pick of Jordan Hicks is the one where it's a position not necessarily of need, but that's what we want. You want them to take the guy who is the highest on their board, regardless of position. I think what we sort of learned is that wide receiver was more of a focus for the Eagles than maybe we would have thought. We thought maybe they'd go something like secondary offensive line in some combination in the first two rounds, then take a wide receiver in the third round, a guy like Chris Conley. But, Fran likes that. But
and where did Chris Conley go, by the way?
Yeah, he was the third round. Okay. Yeah.
But I think Chip Kelly, with Jeremy Maclin gone, recognized that the Eagles did need somebody to come in and make a difference at the wide receiver position. Some people thought maybe Chip Kelly is devaluing wide receivers. He's going to just go with the running backs and tight ends. But I don't think that Riley Cooper as a starting receiver was good enough last year. And I think that there's going to be real competition there. I think there's a good chance you see something like Jordan Matthews, Nelson Aguilar, and Josh Huff as your top three receivers. I sort of hope that's what it is, but we'll see what happens. Riley Cooper obviously brings something to the table.
Glad that we're not talking about Mariota anymore.
Yeah, well, I'm sure
that would have been nice,
but I'm sure that's going to bleed into it a little bit longer, I'm sure, until everyone said that, I'll believe it until he starts a game, or until he gets drafted. Now it's going to be, I'll believe it until he starts a game for Tennessee.
What are the Titans doing?
I don't know. That's a good question.
They draft a fullback.
And they brought another. And they brought another one in an undrafted free agency.
Like they're gonna try to fit a square peg into a round hole by making Marcus Mariota just a Ken Whisenhunt quarterback. It's insane.
We'll see if it works.
It's ridiculous.
We'll see.
Play like use a little bit of creativity.
That was what was interesting last year. Was
what are they doing?
Well, everyone kind of worried and scratched their heads about the pick by Minnesota to take Teddy Bridgewater with North Turner there as the offensive coordinator, because he had never worked with quarterbacks like that. And credit to North Turner, they kind of changed things up and did some different things and phased some of those college type principles into their offense last year. Now whether they keep doing it, we'll see what happens. But it doesn't look like Tennessee's going to do that. So
What a joke.
So the Eagles, they tried to move up. They inquired with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Sure.
They went to number one, tried to get to number one
right
after they couldn't get a deal worked out with Tennessee. So once that didn't happen there at the top, you realize the Eagles were going to stay within that 20th range. The Eagles are coming up on their pick. A couple picks before them go, Eric Armstead went 17th to the Niners. Bo had said the whole time, that's a perfect fit.
Yeah, perfect fit.
Two of my three fits worked out.
Kansas City Chiefs took Marcus Peters. There's some off-the-field concerns, obviously, but very much a first round talent.
That was getting hot late last week was Kansas City, Marcus Peters.
And then 19.
Wait, maybe all three of the fits ended up happening. Because Gordon to the Chargers. And Wayne's to the
Oh, did you have Gordon to the Chargers?
Those were all three.
Oh, there you go. Look at you.
And boom.
And then number 19, the Browns took Cam Irving, the interior lineman out of Florida State. So, obviously, Aguilar was there on the board. There were some rumblings that Aguilar could have gone to the Browns at 19.
Yeah.
There was some concern that he could have gone as high as 16.
To the Texans. Right, yep.
So, there at number 20, you have Aguilar, who you knew the Eagles were interested in. Some of the other players available, Bud Dupree was on the board. They said Brashad Perryman, if you're not sure which receiver they were going to go with. Byron Jones, heavily linked to the Eagles throughout the pre-draft process was there. You know, Shane Ray was there, even though I don't think he's fit. Cedric Abouye was there, if you're looking for offensive linemen. Jake Fisher, who I kept thinking would be a possible fit there. But they go with Aguilar. Fran, from a scouting standpoint, what do you see from Aguilar? How do you think he's going to fit into this Eagles offense?
Well, the biggest thing that you're going to see is you have a guy who can win vertically, who can get downfield and make plays, which is obviously a big part of the Eagles offense. But then also what his best trait is his ability with the ball in his hands. He's a great yards after catch guy. He was used that way at USC. I would imagine he'll be used that way, you know, here with Philadelphia Eagles. Is that whether it's in the screen game, whether it's in, you know, on the shallow crossing routes, all the different ways that the Eagles find ways to get the ball in their playmakers' hands, he's going to flourish in that kind of a role because that's what he's best at.
He's like Jordan Matthews, in the fact that he is used to having played different positions at wide receiver. He's reliable in that he's going to be in the right place at the right time. And I think that's what Chip Kelly wants in this offense. He wants, if he schemes it correctly, he wants the guys to be in the right place so that they can take advantage of the space. And then once they get the ball, take advantage of the space with the ball in their hands. And that's what Aguilar can do.
Yeah, I mean, you could go back. Now, think back to last year. Think of the big catch that Darren Sproles had against the Colts early in the game where he ran that Texas route over the middle and beat the linebacker. Aguilar did that numerous times at USC, lined up in the backfield next to the quarterback and ran a Texas route against the linebacker and was able to win. He lined up, think of all the deep post routes from Jeremy Maclin, lined up far out wide, did all that. Did, you know, all the shallow crossing routes lined up in the slot. He did all that. He was lined up all over the field, all over the formation for USC, and was able to win in a number of different ways.
And interesting to hear Chip Kelly say that in the comparison between Aguilar and Maclin, he said that Maclin is probably a better deep threat right now, more explosive vertically, but Aguilar is a little bit more versatile in what he can do than Jeremy Maclin might be. So that's his scouting report on it.
Yeah. It also brings a return value.
Absolutely.
As well.
Great punt returner.
Which
is so interesting. That was always an interesting thing about Maclin because he was such a great returner in college and then just never really did it in the NFL. But
an extremely impressive young man from a character standpoint.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Off the charts.
And they all are, and that's no surprise.
Yeah, definitely something that you knew Chip Kelly and Ed Mantle were going to go for. So in the second round, we're looking here at the 47th pick. The Eagles moved up. They traded away both their fifth-round picks to take this spot. So some of the players who were – one of the players who was linked to the Eagles was already gone by this point, Donovan Smith, the offensive tackle of Penn State, if that's someone who's going to be on their radar. But at this point, you still had – Mitch Morse, who went just a couple picks later to the Chiefs, who I did not expect to go that high in the second round. Jake Fisher was still on the board as I'm just looking down here. You know, Denzel Perryman, if you wanted more depth at the inside linebacker, went a couple picks later. But it seemed like that Eric Rowe was their target. He was the guy that they wanted to get here.
Yeah, there were rumblings a few picks earlier that the Eagles were trying to move up, I think, with the Vikings, right?
Yes.
And once we heard that in the studio, we were like, it's got to be Rowe.
It
has to be Rowe because he's... You know, going into day two, I had like a list of there were like eight guys who I thought the Eagles would consider in the two rounds combined. And Hicks was on there too, and this was just off the list of guys they had in. But Rowe was clearly the top guy, even ahead of Fisher. Once they made that move, it made a lot of sense. I thought it was great. I mean, if you had told me that the Eagles were coming out of the draft with Eric Rowe in round one and Aguilar in round two, that would be great also. You could easily make that case. I'm over the moon about Rowe.
No question. We've talked about him and just the way that he'll fit into this defense. I mean, whether it's a corner, whether some people, you know, think he could be a safety, he's a great player. I'm excited to see him play.
Well, how about as a corner? Because it seemed like Chip was indicating that's where he'll start his career at.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he played as a senior at Utah. I mean, he's got great length. He's got the physical demeanor to come up and play against the run. He's got the long speed. We saw his athletic traits at the combine, which I think surprised some people because people didn't really see that coming. Not just high athletic traits for a safety, but he was in the top five in a number of different spots for the cornerback position. So, you know, I'm excited to see what he brings to this offense. Or to this defense. I'm pretty surprised that he lasted as long as he did.
Over under, week 4.5 for Eric Rose starting at cornerback.
I take under.
I think he's. I'm going to project right now. He'll be the guy opposite Maxwell.
Okay,
week one.
I probably agree.
I think he's the left corner. I think he's a left corner, and Byron Maxwell stays the right corner.
This is what's interesting. Okay, Bill Davis last 2 years has kept his corners on the same side. Does he change that this year?
Well, it's interesting because Rowe did that. He stayed at left corner,
and so
which in college you often don't see. You see them switching sides because of the boundaries. Yes. He just stayed at left corner. So, you know, he's used to that, I guess.
That's going to be interesting, especially with, you know, you look at the players that they're going to have to go up against early, some of these top-notch receivers. You know, right off the bat, Julio Jones in week one. I mean,
that's the thing. I mean, this schedule is not a super difficult schedule, but, I mean, no surprise that it's packed full of receivers because the NFL is packed full of receivers. But Julio Jones, Calvin Johnson,
Dez Bryant week two. It's
Dez Bryant, Odell Beckham twice, DeSean Jackson twice, you know, Mike Evans.
It's no wonder the Eagles took three defensive backs.
Sure, but are you going to pay all this money to Byron Maxwell and then be like, all right, well, we'll just move Julio Jones to the other side away from him?
Right. We'll see.
So that's going to be something interesting to watch in the OTA. So in the third round, the Eagles took inside linebacker Jordan Hicks. Fran, we got to give it
love
up to
him.
You.
This is one of Fran's guys. Yep.
Yes. If you watched our Eagles Draft Central preview show,
that's right.
Fran Duffy's mid-round target to watch for the Eagles was none other than Jordan Hicks.
And a lot of the things I said were things that Chip Kelly said in the press conference. No, I mean, I was
I
very,
thought it was
going to
be Amos.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to hit the double because I said Rowe early.
Right.
I said Rowe and Amos, but
no,
I'm glad it wasn't.
I'm really excited about Jordan Hicks. I mean, I think that obviously you may not see him start, you know, early on in his career, but I think down the road, you know, a couple, 2-3 years, he's going to be a starter. He's going to be an every down player. He's got the athleticism to play in space. He's got the physicality to play in the box. Good run defender, really good coverage player. I really like Jordan Hicks. Obviously, the injuries played a part into why he fell, but he's got good size. He's got good athleticism, like I talked about. High character guy, another one of these guys. I mean, all three of these guys that we got to meet over the weekend were A-plus guys. I mean, Rowe, Aguilar, and Kendricks were all, and Hicks were all, you know, very high character guys.
Who else went around that?
So pretty much everyone's talking about how the Eagles did not get an offensive lineman.
And that's because they just got plucked.
This is where
the
run was, because I already had mentioned Mitch Morse. Jake Fisher was off the board. Ali Marpet went in the second round. Jeremiah Putasi went early third round. As I'm going down the list here, I'm just looking at some other positions. You know,
Glowinski went, right?
He went in the fourth.
Round. He was still on the boards. Okay.
Putasi is a guy they had in for a visit. I think if he was there, that might have been a conversation.
Yes, but some of the other players, you know, Quentin Rollins, even though they got Rowe, Oedeyizua, one of France players entire draft.
It's gonna be
dagger.
Tough, Fran.
That was a dagger.
You know, Eli Harold, Lorenzo Maldon, if you want the edge rushers there at that spot, those guys were off the board. So, you know, it's not a surprise when Chip Kelly said that this was the best player. It looks like this was the best player for them there.
No
the
question.
Third round.
Is there a part of you that is excited to be able to just see Owa twice a year?
No question. I mean, you know, that'll be fun. but, I mean, and, you know, it's also funny, too, is last week we did our would you rather, or was it would you rather? We had to pick three. Who would we rather not see on the Dallas Cowboys?
Would you rather. It was a would you rather.
Yeah, it was a would you rather, and who would you rather not see? We said Melvin Gordon, Byron Jones, and Randy Gregory
on
the Cowboys.
Credit to me for putting that together.
Yeah, that was very well done. And they ended up with two of the three. They were the guys that we said we didn't want to see.
Yeah, we all said Melvin Gordon.
We all said Melvin Gordon.
So then the Eagles.
But I think I said that Randy Gregory I'd be okay with because just.
Sure.
The bus factor.
No question.
Because of the bus factor there. Fourth round, Eagles had their pick, but they traded away to the Detroit Lions for a third round pick next season. So some good forward thinking. The only thing is, with no fifth round picks because of the trade to get Eric Rowe, the Eagles were sitting there on day three up until the sixth round, and then they got the number 191, and they took Jacory Shepard, who we talked about briefly here early in the program. Some people think he could be the steal of the draft because of the fact that he was slowed down by the injury in the pre-draft process. You know, it's obvious the Eagles wanted to improve the secondary, but by and large, though, that was a target that they had, and hopefully they have some good value there.
Well, what's ironic, too, is that when they made the trade for the fourth round pick for the future third, which is great. I think you do that pretty much whenever you can.
And especially compounded by them not having a second after the Bradford trade.
Absolutely. But when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is the pick they got from the Bills last year. So I'm like, okay, well, where did that pick come from? And it came from Bryce Brown. And we got Bryce Brown in the seventh round a few years ago, and we got that from a seventh-round pick that we acquired in exchange for Asante Samuel. So Asante Samuel essentially turned into a third-round pick in 2016.
It's the never-ending trade.
That's right.
Yeah.
How do you think the conversion from wide receiver to corner has helped him?
Has it helped Jacory Shepard?
Jacory Shepard, yes. Because he was a wide receiver as a freshman, made the transition to the defensive backfield, and you know, it's been there ever since.
Yeah, I mean, the things you always hear from a lot of those guys are, Richard Sherman talked about it, is just the ability to see route concepts. You know all these different combinations that the receivers are going to run, that offenses are going to throw at you. Obviously, the ball skills play a part.
Absolutely.
I think there are a lot of those different things from a mental aspect that help to ease that transition.
And then five picks later, they stayed in Kansas and went with Randall Evans out of Kansas State, who has an interesting backstory where he's dating the sister of NBA star Michael Beasley, the former number two overall pick in the NBA draft. Evans wasn't getting much love in the recruiting process, so Beasley put in a few feelers at Kansas State. Evans got there as a walk-on and ends up playing 40-some games during his career there in Manhattan.
Are they still dating?
Yes, they are still together.
Wow. How about that?
Love and basketball.
That's right.
That's good.
Yeah. You know, Randall Evans was as you said before the draft, or before we filmed this, friend, the very last player next on your list who you didn't get to watch. So he was number 302. You ended up watching 301.
That's right.
But then you did go back and watch him.
I did. And, you know, a big physical guy. We knew that the Eagles had brought him in, and that was reported in the pre-draft process. But a big physical guy had lined up in the slot, mostly for Kansas State. Really good tackler. Shows the ability to turn and run with receivers. In the sixth round, to get a guy who's at that size, I mean, he's near 6 foot, and have the versatility to play inside or out, it's a good pick.
And some people have theorized that he could be a potential safety conversion. And the Eagles now have like four guys on this roster who are sort of tweeners. We don't know whether they'll work at corner or safety. Jalen Watkins, EJ Biggers, Nolan Carroll. So that's going to be interesting just to see how things shake out this summer, where guys are lining up.
You know what? I just thought about this. You know what the other team that's always the case with, and that's New England. The Patriots, always, they have a DB room where they have four or five, six guys that could play corner or safety or inside at slot.
I'm trying to think of the guys who made the conversion for them. I mean, look at Devin McCourty.
No question.
Kyle Arrington, guys have gone back and forth.
Yep.
So you look at Malcolm Jenkins for the Eagles. He was a corner who converted to safety. So, but it's interesting also that the Eagles have listed these guys as DBs.
Right.
So they're not even putting labels on them from the jump. So they're just going to let them go on the field and sort it all out.
Sure.
Last but not least here in the NFL draft for the Eagles at number 237.
Certainly
overall,
not least at that size.
6'9", 302 pounds, Brian Mahalik, a mammoth of a man at defensive end, played in the 4-3 for Boston College. But he played all along the line. He played the nose. He played tackle. He played at the end spots. It's interesting because I remember at the top of the draft, we always talked about if Eric Armstead was available at number 20, that'd be a tempting proposition there for the Eagles just because of that you don't teach size. It seems like they have that here, and if you go through the athleticism rankings, the Spark rankings, he was the number 2 rated Spark defensive lineman in the entire draft.
Yeah, I mean, it shows on film. I mean, the guy moves really, really well for a guy that size, so... in the seventh round, it's an intriguing pick.
Yeah, size, speed, athleticism, the things Chip Kelly talked about. You sort of saw that with all the picks. Rowe, Hicks, Mahalik, those guys all have high Spark scores for their positions. So it's a thing to keep an eye on, I guess, moving forward for the Eagles.
So the Eagles also had 16 rookie free agents. Any of them stand out? I know a lot of people are focused on the offensive line in particular because of the fact the Eagles didn't draft any offensive linemen this year. Who are some of the players that stood out to you among the undrafted class?
Well, obviously the offensive linemen are the ones who we're going to sort of take a look at. Cole Manhart is a player from Division II Nebraska Kearney, I think, that the Eagles looked at closely in the pre-draft process. He could be a potential guy. Those guys are all going to compete at guard, I think. Brett Boyko, who was supposed to be at the Shrine Game, pulled out for an injury, 4-year starter, I think. He's going to be in the mix, obviously. The tight ends, there's going to be a possibility, I think, for a guy to make an impact if the Eagles decide to carry a fourth tight end instead of a fourth running back. Eric Tomlinson is the huge guy from UTEP.
Big guys. Yep. Big guys.
And then Travis Rasidi, who was at the Shrine Game, who we saw, He's a little talented. Eagles, I think, maybe considered him in the seventh round. He's going to play defensive tackle, which means he's going to bulk up a little bit, I guess. Is there anybody I'm missing? Oh, you know who I'm interested in? The return man from Purdue, who is supposed to be just super fast.
Mostert?
The running back. He could be interesting. He'll be one to watch in the preseason to see if he can do something.
Yeah. No question. Boyko is a guy that I watched getting ready for the Shrine game. Obviously, ended up not going down there, but... played left tackle. They moved him inside to guard later on in the season. He has the shortest arms of any of those tackle guard prospects that were at the combine this year. I think there was 32 inches. So he's going to be a guard at the next level more than likely. But one of those like jack of all, master of none type players. But I liked him on tape. I thought he moved better than he tested. He didn't test overly well, if I remember right. But I thought he's one of those guys that it doesn't always look pretty, and that's why he didn't get drafted. It doesn't look pretty, but he got the job done. He was an effective player for them.
And Devontae Davis is an interesting player, super productive at UNLV, but I just think wide receiver is going to be a hard place to work your way onto the roster.
And a couple other names there. Rashid Bailey, a local prospect out of Delaware and Valley. John Harris out of Texas, also very, very productive at the college level. So,
who are the other two linemen?
Mike Kosha.
Okay, from New Hampshire. Yeah, more of a center.
And then the other one is escaping me. So the other one, I'm not sure.
Apologies to unnamed offensive lineman number four.
Yeah.
So transition to the rest of the NFC East. We touched briefly on the Giants. They got Diggy Zua there in the third round. They went with Eric Flowers, who, if you listen to our Journey to the Draft mock draft beat writer podcast.
I think we had six hits. Is that right?
Were there six hits? Good.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of them, of course, at the top of the draft, but nonetheless, still.
But Jordan was all over that one.
Yes, he was the one who went with Eric Flowers for the Giants there at number nine. And they got Landon Collins in the second round. So you look at those first three picks, guys who look like who could be instant contributors for that Giants team looking to turn things around.
Best tweet of draft weekend was Landon Collins tweeting, "I am a Giant baby." He didn't have the comma, so he's
a Giant baby.
I look forward to bringing that up.
That was repeated countless times. However many years. Countless times.
I am a giant baby. Malcolm Bunch from UCLA.
Malcolm Bunch, yes.
Who we talked about on the podcast.
Tony Pauline. Yes, said he was doing very good in the pre-draft workouts.
Transferred from Florida?
Miami.
Same thing. Anyway, Giants, makes sense. That offensive line has always been an issue. They need to sort of protect Eli Manning while he ducks and chucks, which is what he always does. And Landon Collins, I got to say that I'm not super scared about it. They need a safety. They had no safety on the roster. Yes. So it made sense that they traded up to get him. But I'm not really quaking in my boots like I am about Odell Beckham.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to find ways to attack him in coverage. And that's what every team will try and find ways to do that. I'll be interested to see how they use him once they get him on the field. But Flowers makes a lot of sense because some people see him as a guard. Some people see him as a tackle. He's got a lot of talent, and he's a high character guy. He loves football. He loves working and trying to get better, and that's not the issue at all, but he needs a lot of work. So, after I watched him, I asked a bunch of people that I know that are coaches, hey, and I should kind of show them some
Greg
clips.
Cosell?
Well, no, I asked, I was like, look, I said, if he does this wrong and he does this wrong, how long does that take to fix? And a lot of them were like, well, in a week of practice, if I work with him for a week, I might be able to fix it. So, we'll see what happens. Flowers has got a ton of ability.
You look at the Dallas Cowboys, the defending NFC East champions. I remember being in Chicago watching the NFL Network feed from the Dallas Cowboys war room, and they were celebrating when they were on the clock, and you're just thinking, who was still on the board that would make them celebrate? And it was getting Byron Jones, the cornerback out of Connecticut. So they went with him, and then they got Randy Gregory, who has the talent, should have been a top 10 pick from a talent standpoint, but off-the-field concerns pushed him into the second round. So a little bit of rolling the dice there. Not a surprise.
Yeah, I'd like to say how much I dislike those guys now that they're Cowboys, but I actually think that Dallas is the best landing spot for Randy Gregory because they will commit the resources like they have with Dez Bryant to sort of have a team with him off the field.
That's a good point.
And if he hits, that's something they need. It's a dynamic pass rusher. So I think that pick makes a lot of sense for him. And it's not like, he's not Frank Clark. His issues off the field are not the worst things in the world, in my estimation.
The reported issues are.
Yes.
Yeah. And then Byron Jones makes a lot of sense for them. Their secondary has been a tire fire in the past. So that's a player who makes sense for them.
It's the second mention of a tire fire.
Yeah, I shouldn't have used it again. It's a little
That's all right.
Repetitive.
And then Washington Going with the offensive lineman at number five, they passed on Leonard Williams, going Brandon Scherff. And then in the second round game, Preston Smith adding another edge rusher to the defense.
What are you laughing
at? Do you remember my reaction after the Redskins drafted Preston Smith?
You mean Washington?
Yeah, after Washington selected Preston Smith. I was in the studio with Bo, and after they made the pick, I like Preston Smith a lot.
Yeah.
I punched at the air and said, I hate that they have good management right now because Preston Smith's a great pick, and I love Brandon Scherff. I mean, those are two really good picks. And I like Matt Jones, and they took in the third round, too, as a downhill running back. So it's good. I thought they had a good draft.
They pair Smith with Kerrigan.
Scherff, we had talked before the draft. Some people were surprised he went at five. Fran and I had said he would have made a lot of sense for Washington because their offensive line is terrible. Also, they've got one starting caliber player on the offensive line.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
We thought they might move back a couple spots and get Scherff, but it makes a lot of sense. And then Preston Smith, they need pass rushers too. Yeah. So
there's a look around the NFC East. So now that we've gone through the draft process, it's time to look back. Months of reflection, months of would you rathers and
a lot of games.
Lots of games on the clocks.
All right, Fran.
Abound. How did we do, Bo?
Fran's the one.
Fran,
I did
Fran
it.
Compiled. Fran compiled.
I compiled. So this took about an hour and a half yesterday. But
that's it?
I got through it. Yeah, you know, because I tried to keep track as it was going on.
Gotcha.
So it saved me time on the back end. Right. In third place, and this was I'm sorry, but third place with 34 out of a possible 98 points.
Jesus.
Robert Wolf.
Is that total points or is total, that points that, per points per game?
34 out of a total possible 98 points. Okay. So of all the, you know, now we scored things differently.
Explain your scoring system.
All the over-unders were 1 point each. All the would you rather, or we didn't do would you rathers. All the who will be's were 3 points. So, you know, who will be the first person.
If you got it exactly right.
If you got it exactly right, that was 3 points. All the third is the word were 3 points each. So if you got that correctly, that was 3 points. Order in the court, we did a little bit differently. I'm not going to get too intricately into how we exactly scored that, but
sounds a little shady.
Well, you helped me with the scoring, so don't throw.
Yeah, but I didn't oversee.
I've got all the results here, but
it was 3 points for the best, one point for second,
something like that, exactly. So then the round of the fury were also 1 point each. So your biggest issue, Bo, was that you only went 6 for 14 on the over unders, and that set you back. But that put you in third place. We'll just go right to first place with the first place winner with 60 out of a possible 108 points, Fran Duffy.
How many points did C-Mac have?
C-Mac,
excellent.
You made it very, very close. C-Mac, I was sweating a little bit as I was tallying it up because C-Mac started 9 of 9 on his over-unders.
Wow.
He was just on fire the first couple weeks. Now, it was a late addition to the show because we were down at the Senior Bowl Shrine game. So before the combine, he jumped in. Started 9 of 9 on his over-unders. Your big thing, this was the kill shot for you. Last week when we did our final preview show, we did Who Will Bees, and you went 0-for on the Who Will Bees, and I went and I got 6 of 9, and that put me over. You had a total of 45 points, and I had a total of 60, but with the percentage points, because that's how we did it. We did it by percentage of possible points. You would have won if you had gotten just one of those questions correctly.
Really?
And if I had gotten one of mine wrong. So if there was a 1 point swing or a one question
swing. It was
that
close. Wow.
Either way, that would have gone.
What were some of those?
What were some of the best calls?
All right, some of the best calls. We talked about the Cowboys one earlier, but let's see here. Like I said, C-Mac was just on fire with the over-unders. He started... over under on Oregon players drafted. Bo, you took the over on that. Both C-Mac and I took the under. The over under was set at 1.5. You, like I said, Bo, you really struggled.
I was trying to make it, you know.
Sure.
I was trying to be different. That was the thing.
The ones that we hit on, Bo, you and I both said Eric Rowe will be the first cornerback at the Senior Bowl drafted. We said that back at the Senior Bowl.
Nice.
So we got that correct. We correctly predicted the Phil Dorsett running the fastest 40 at the Senior Bowl. Let's see here. There's so many players. The one of the big ones for me was Frank Clark was the surprise in the top 64.
That was a good one.
Yeah, and I said
at DJ 65
Smith.
Was DJ Smith.
The first pick. Ridiculous.
Yeah, you just missed it. So that was a tough one for you. The order in the courts were tough.
I just had more faith in the NFL that they wouldn't take Frank Clark in the second round, but I guess you didn't have such faith.
No, I thought he had more talent than that. So let's see. The other big ones.
Anybody hit an order in the court like spot on more than a three person one?
I hit the tight end one. So you did a seven person tight end one last week.
He didn't hit it exactly, but
I didn't hit
close.
It exactly. But I was I was one player off, so I got a good amount of points for that. Let's see the order in the court. The linebackers, you got completely wrong.
No, I was close.
No, not for this one. There was one a couple weeks ago with Rabeek Wilson, Tywan Jones, and Mike Hall.
Yeah,
well, actually, that's a tough one anyway because two of those guys went undrafted. But I mean, it was a tight race. Yeah. C-Mac made it close, a lot closer than I thought it was going to be. So.
I just want to go through the last show to be like, what were some of those ones I completely whiffed on?
The ones you completely whiffed on, okay? The who will be the second offensive lineman drafted? I called it as Eric Flowers. You called Lyle Collins. And then you went, Bo, you went Brandon Scherff, who went the first overall, obviously.
We'd waited to film that a day later.
Yeah. Who will surprise in the top 64? We talked about you. Garrett Grayson.
Oh, did I go with Grayson?
You went with Garrett Grayson.
Okay.
Who went in the third round. And then all three of us got the who will be the last player in the green room. You and I went with Devin Smith. You went with Benardrick McKinney.
Who was it?
It was actually Randy Gregory.
Nobody lasted to the third round. Interesting.
Nobody lasted to the third round.
Thanks to Daniel Jeremiah for the hot tip about Wes Saxton, huh?
Yeah, how about that one?
Being a second round pick, goes undrafted.
The third is the word I gained a lot of points on. The original third is the word I gained a lot of points on. Who was the third wide receiver drafted? I correctly said Devontae Parker.
Wow.
Who was the third player drafted overall?
That's you selling your soul because you don't like Devontae Parker.
Well, I knew that. The question was who's going to be the third receiver drafted?
I hope you can sleep at night.
I'm going to sleep well with this victory. Third Oregon player drafted. We all got Chase. So, you know, there are a lot that we all got correct. But in the end, the best of the cream rose to the top.
All right, well, there is one more game, Fran.
I don't know how I ended up in this one, so.
After the Shrine game.
The sickness continues.
For the second consecutive year, Fran and I ranked all 98 non-specialists at the Shrine game in order of likelihood that they would get drafted.
And this had to be an ugly list this year.
And boy, was this ugly. Last year, we did fairly well. This year, not so much. In my top 10... two players were drafted. Number five, Trey McBride, and my number eight, John Miller.
Who were your top four?
Tony Washington.
I can't believe number
one. I'm very surprised he didn't get drafted. Tywan Jones is number two. I'm not as surprised he didn't get drafted after we rewatched him.
Yep.
My number three was Sean Hickey, the offensive lineman from Syracuse. Very surprised he didn't get drafted. My number six and seven, I went with my heart. Xavier Williams, the Northern Iowa defensive tackle, and BJ Finney, the Kansas State center. Both did not get drafted. My nine was Michigan wide receiver Devin Gardner, who I think will make the Patriots. That's my call.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
At least with practice squad, then he'll eventually get on. And then I had a bad pick with number 10. I went Deion Long from Maryland. Should have known better. Fran, your top 10, you had five players drafted.
Oh, okay. I did a lot better than I thought.
You did. You had Hickey and Darian Miller 1-2.
Okay.
Darius Kilgo got drafted. Josh Shaw got drafted.
You had Shaw low, didn't you?
I did have Shaw low.
Okay.
Then you went Finney, Tony Washington, Tywan Jones. And then your eight was DeAntres Mount, the pass rusher from Louisville.
He went in like the fourth or fifth round.
He went in the sixth round.
All right, never mind.
Damian Swan, the Georgia cornerback, at number nine. And then Trey McBride at number 10. So of the 98 players at the Shrine game, 36 were drafted.
Okay. Now you do this in terms of confidence points, right? So we get a certain amount of points, or is it just straight across?
No, it's the points.
Okay,
yeah,
so we get
the points of this you had for the 36 players drafted. The first Shrine game player drafted. Do you know who it was? There was a second round pick.
Off the top of my head, I'm gonna have to say it was.
It was a surprise.
Was it Jamon Brown?
No, with the last
pick. He was the last pick
of the second round. The New England Patriots took Stanford safety Jordan Richards.
Jordan Richards. Okay.
Fran had 28 points. I had 32 points. So anyway.
Minimal jump.
There were a few third round picks. The first third round pick is a player who still boggles my mind that he was even drafted. And that's Jamon Brown. Who was the worst player at the Shrine Game, non-Zach Center category. Fran had him as an 84. I had him as a 92 out of 98. Then John Miller and Craig Mager were picked. Anyway, as we get to the totals. Fran, 1,476 points.
Okay, 1,476, okay.
Bo, 1,458 points.
Oh, I got it.
No, that means I win.
Oh, you won.
That means I win, you idiot.
Snuck it out.
That means that, you know, listen.
It was tight.
One of us has a better eye for talent than the other. And that's what I, if you're talking about pure raw eye for talent.
It's clear that you have the advantage.
Clear that I have the advantage. The biggest difference makers, there were a few guys. Craig Mager, I had a 50-point advantage on you. I had a 16, you had a 66.
And I went back and watched him more, and I should have had him higher.
Yeah, you should have.
I should have had him higher.
Josh Shaw, you got 33 points on. Jake Ryan, I got 44 points on.
I mean, that's the difference. One guy.
Yeah. Yep.
One 51, guy makes a
difference. No question.
You got 51 points on Tyler Davison. I got 35 on Keith Mumphrey.
Yeah.
39 on Darren Waller.
How is Keith Mumphrey drafted?
You got 49 on Anthony Ciccolo and 50 on Bryce Hager. And then I got 40 on Deron Brown. Those were the big guys. But listen, when it comes down to it, you know, maybe you can predict how the draft is going to go better. I just have better raw talent. Evaluation. Nailed it. So
congrats.
Boom.
It's gonna be getting a call from Mike Tannenbaum.
That's two straight Shrine Game victories for your boy.
What are you guys gonna do now? Gotta go whole rest of the year.
That's two straight years where I think we both had guys like in our bottom 10 get drafted. Last year it was Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
He was in your bottom 10?
The buzz didn't start on him until a little bit later.
Gotcha.
Jamon Brown.
I figured he would be like your top 10 guy.
I can't believe Jamon Brown got drafted. Jeez.
Well, I've already started watching on 2016, to answer your question.
Oh, I'm sure
you have.
Another
Canadian guy got drafted this year, Edmund Robinson. I had him as a 94.
Oh, did Robinson get drafted?
Yeah. Seventh round. I had him as a 94. Jeez.
So you already have your 2016 big board
put together? I didn't say that. I didn't do the big board or a mock draft
yet. You didn't do a top 100?
No, that didn't get released yet.
I feel good about? I feel good about Blake Bell.
Oh, yeah? Going to San Francisco,
Niners?
Right?
He was a fourth-round pick. I feel good about that.
You're just going to post that up on your wall in the cubicle.
Just going on my resume for sure.
Wow, yeah.
He's got the fat head above his bed. Ready to go.
I watched Hackenberg and Bo's boy, 12-gauge, Cardale Jones.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I watched both those guys. Both have very good arms. No question about that.
Cardale's got a better hose.
We've transitioned to Journey to the Next Draft. Presented by AAA.
Now listen, you end one journey, you start a new one.
It never ends.
One window closes and another one opens.
Well, who did you like better?
I like Hackenberg a little bit more, but I think that...
Yeah, because you're of the co-sell camp.
Well, I'm just... Cardale Jones has
a clear
crazy
difference.
Tools.
If you say so, Greg.
He's 6'5", 250 pounds, and he runs like that.
He's got NFL pocket passer tools.
But Cardale Jones has no sense of how to play in the pocket.
Well.
Yet. I mean, he started three games.
Yeah.
So he's got maybe two
three high
years.
Pressure games.
He's got three more years to prove it. So we'll see.
And on that note, it's a swan song.
That's it.
Ron Swanson, a swan song.
The end of the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Is there anything else we can talk about? I don't want to leave.
Is this the BT's? Yes.
Yes.
Oh, this is Bo's. This is Bo's song.
I don't have anything. I just want to keep talking with you guys.
One window closes and another opens. As the Journey to the Draft podcast comes to an end.
For Bo Wolf and Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. This has been the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Xavier Williams, goodbye.